Hello, welcome to another episode of Turkey Book Talk. I'm the host, William Armstrong. In this podcast, I talk to authors about newly released books on Turkey and its neighbourhood. You can subscribe to Turkey Book Talk on iTunes, Podbean or Stitcher, or you can follow via the Facebook page or subscribe at my website armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com. And don't forget, if you do enjoy the podcast and you want to support independent podcasting, you can do so via my Patreon account, making a monetary donation, small or large, on a per episode basis. Find details of all that through all the Turkey Book Talk pages. But now let's get cracking with the latest show, and I'm pleased this week to welcome Ece Temelkuran. She's a popular novelist and journalist, and the author of a new book in English called Turkey, The Insane and the Melancholy, which is published by Zed Books from the University of Chicago Press. The book provides a vivid and personal account of the current state of Turkey. Writing from the perspective of a secular leftist, Ece Temelkuran writes with a weary shaking of the head about what's been going on in recent years, but also with a fair amount of anger and also humour. My review of the book hasn't yet appeared, as I'm waiting for it to be published first by the Times Literary Supplement and then in abridged form in the Hurriyet Daily News, but I started by asking Ece Temelkuran what she wanted to get across to the English reading audience through this book.
For the last 10 years, or even more than that, Turkey's voice was heard through AKP or the governing parties or their supporters' narrative. And it was this narrative of perfect marriage between democracy and moderate Islam has been invading the intellectual and the intellectual circles and mainstream media. So I just wanted to tell the story of Turkey from another point of view, which can be described as secular and oppositional. So this was the voice that I wanted to go through to the rest of the planet, in a way. Especially after Gezi uprising, I think it was crucial for an audience to hear the voices of those who joined the Gezi uprising, or to hear the voice of those who were not supporting the narrative of perfect marriage between democracy and moderate Islam.
You comment in the book on the collapse of what has been called the Turkey model, mm-hmm. That was when the West was once widely praising President Erdogan and the AKP as these great democratic reformers. And back when that idea was still popular in the West, you were very critical even then. And that didn't make you very popular at the time. But now the skeptics like yourself appear to have been vindicated. I mean, what's that like as an experience?
Interesting, I should say. It's as if there's a door opening in history for people like me, not only me, but people who think like me, who reacted like me for long years, and who have been not only unpopular but also invisible. I remember this one day in Oxford University. There was a Turkey seminar in Middle Eastern Studies Center in St. Anthony's College, and all the speakers who talked about how Turkey is becoming the paradise of moderate Islam and democracy, and how they were applauded and, praised by the audience, whereas I was raising my hand to, ask questions or make my comments, and I was completely invisible. And now, comparing to that moment, right now, the book has been reviewed in Financial Times wonderfully, and you are having this interview with me in English. So I think it is time for people like me to be visible again, and I hope this opening in the history is, will be adequate, let's say.
And at the same time, I suppose that opening is happening at a time when voices like yourselves are kind of not being heard in the mainstream media domestically. You were previously a very prominent figure with a column in various major newspapers, but for a few years now, people like yourself have not really been that visible, in the mainstream media in Turkey. So there's this kind of shift, isn't there, between, you know, the abroad, people like you weren't heard before, and now you are being listened to, and now in Turkey, people like yourselves are not being heard as much as previously.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm like, personally, I was the lucky one, because I have been a novelist. I have been a literature person from the very beginning. So I recreated my career in literature in a way, not only in Turkey, but outside Turkey. So I was the lucky one. And I always found a venue to voice my thoughts and so on and so forth. But all the journalists, I think I can say all of them, are jobless now. All the people that I consider as proper journalists have been sacked from their, you know, jobs and so on. So, you know, this was obvious. It was obvious that this is going to be the situation at least for 10 years now. I've been writing that we are all going to be invisible. We are all going to be out of our jobs, and we are all going to be suffering or trying to survive in this, you know, authoritarian environment. I was writing for Milliyet and then Habertürk, and I had a, you know, quite a big audience, I should say. But then when you are sacked, you're not only sacked, but also you are stigmatized as, you know, invalid or persona non grata in a way. That's not an easy thing to deal with, not only for me, but for all the people. And now, on top of it, right now, I think there's the intimidation or there's the concern of being imprisoned or being prosecuted, arrested, and so on and so forth. So these are not the best times, I can say, for journalists or for those people who are commenting on the current situation in Turkey.
I mean, I first came to the country almost seven years ago. And back then, it was really that sort of heyday of the Turkey model stuff. And the mood has obviously changed sharply since then. And it seems like, I don't know, these mm-hmm. days, so many people that I speak to are always asking me, you know, they say, why are you here? Why do you want to be here? If I could leave, then I would. And of course, many educated people in Turkey are now looking at possible ways to leave. It feels like there's this danger of a brain drain, which is very sad. And when I first came here, it really wasn't like that. I can't remember people asking those questions before. It's been a big, you know, it's been very striking to observe that difference, that shift over the years.
Yeah, this is the tragic part of the story. And I think this all happened, the serious shift in the mood happened after Gezi, and more actually after the 1st of November elections, where I think people thought, okay, this was the end, and people like us won't be tolerated even in this country. I think, you know, many people feel like they are not first-class citizens anymore, and they're not wanted in this, in quotes, new Turkey. And there's a new Turkey that is being, you know, building up since a decade now. And obviously, the proper citizen of this new country is not the people who are opposing, who are thinking critically, and so on and so forth. There is a great danger of brain drain, for sure. But when is that? It is taken as a betrayal to the country. But it's obvious that full obedience is required to this country, full obedience to the authority, political authority. And those who are not paying that respect or who are not submitting themselves completely are very much likely to, you know, live in other countries if they can. These are constantly turbulent times, and the consistency of attacks and the continuity of violence, I think, make people think of other options.
We're painting a very gloomy picture here, but also the book has plenty of humour in it, but it's mostly dark humour, and on the whole, the tone is pretty pessimistic about the state of the country. Mm-hmm. It's almost the kind of portrait of a dystopia, really.
Well, I am not very happy with that, but, you know, starting with the dark humor, this is the only way to survive in the country, and those who live in Turkey know that already. I mean, we cannot find another psychological attitude, let's say, to survive the current circumstances. I don't know if that humor is, supporting us to survive, or is it making us more cynical and more passive? But there is this dark humor. It's not only me, but, you know, many people are sharing this sentiment, I guess. As for the gloomy picture, well, it is so. And I couldn't see too many beams of light, so to speak, when I was writing the book. And it was just after the 7th of June elections, and there was still hope. And by the time that passed after I wrote the book, things got really scarier in a way. But, you know, I'm not a big fan of the word hope anyway. So, you know, when there is no hope, you have determination. And I still think that people have determination. Many people have that determination to keep their homeland as their homeland. You know, I know that many people are talking about leaving the country, living in another country, and so on and so forth. But not many of them are willing to do that, I guess. And they're still, you know, holding on.
And of course, also, there's this, in terms of how people look at the situation, you know, there's also this big divide. So there's a dark, pessimistic tone, which is probably more realistic. But it also contrasts massively with this optimism of, you know, government supporters. So even when all these kinds of turbulence is shaking the country, there's almost this kind of euphoria as this big majority of people rally behind Erdogan. And it seems increasingly like the magic of the government is able to turn around every negative thing that happens 180 degrees, and even bad events and mistakes and security failures are just believed by many as just evidence that dark forces want to halt Turkey's rise as a great power. I mean, how do you explain this emotional bond between the government and its supporters?
Well, I cannot. But obviously, Mr. Erdogan, the president, is the most brilliant politician that this country has ever seen. This is magic, and it cannot be told. It cannot be explained otherwise. I think he managed to identify himself with the masses, and the masses, you know, respond to him immediately whenever he needs to, you know, mobilize them. It is really magical. But then, you know, the contrast, the sentimental contrast between the opposition and the supporters of the government is really, you know, unbelievable. And I think this is the emotional breaking point for many people. It is this sentimental contradiction that creates and deepens the crack between us and them. There is us and them since AKP came to power. This narrative of we and the others is so strong, and it's becoming even more so. It's so strong that now there is a emotional ban, in a way. If you voice your concerns about the country, as I told before, it's like you're betraying the country. So you are not even allowed to feel concern or, you know, depressed about the situation. This is very interesting, and I noticed it very vividly in the Istanbul airport bomb, during the Istanbul airport bombing. I wrote this article for New York Times, and I was telling about this contradiction between the, you know, supporters of the government and the opposition, and how they contradict. So I branded it as an emotional ban, and I think it's becoming stronger and stronger by time. And, you know, considering that we are now, you know, de facto in war in Syria, I think this emotional ban will be even more strict in coming days.
The book was obviously written before the thwarted July coup attempt, and some people have praised the apparent unity in the aftermath of the coup, while others have focused on the government's purge and worry about the anti-democratic moves accelerating even further. Where do you stand on the situation in Turkey now after the coup attempt?
The coup attempt was extremely worrying, but the aftermath and the measures that have been taken against the alleged responsible parties are becoming equally worrying at the moment. So I think constantly in the worrying position when it comes to coup or when it comes to anything about Turkey, like many people, I guess. On the other hand, I think there's still a beam of light, a little bit hope for Turkey. But it is very important to underline that Turkey's problem is not only Turkey's problem at the moment. The whole region is collapsing in a way. And it is, for me, kind of ironic because Turkish right for decades, starting from 1950s, was promising the masses that Turkey will be a little America, whereas I think we are now witnessing that Turkey is becoming, I'm worrying that we are going to witness that Turkey is going to become a little Russia. And I think the situation is worrying not only for Turkey, but for the whole region, even for Europe, because what happens in Turkey is affecting not only the region, but Europe as well. So, like for many years now, I'm worrying about this country and I'm still in the worrying position.
That was Ece Temelkuran. My review of her book, Turkey, the Insane and the Melancholy, will be published soon in the Times Literary Supplement and later in the Hürriyet Daily News, so keep your eyes peeled for that. In the meantime, you can subscribe to Turkey Book Talk via iTunes, Podbean or Stitcher, if you haven't already. And if you like the podcast, don't forget to rate it on iTunes or Stitcher, which helps other people find the show. Or you can like the Facebook page. And just a reminder here that you can also support the podcast via my Patreon account, donating on a per episode basis. Many thanks to current supporters Andrew Krupchank, Özlem Bey Arslan, Steve Bryant and Aaron Ataman. But for now, until the next episode, thank you very much for listening.